The Des Moines Symphony's 2018-19 season is scheduled to kick off on September 22nd and 23rd with their Beethoven and Mahler's Titan concert. I'm Jacqueline Hallblum. Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Arts Showcase today features the Des Moines Symphony's music director and conductor, Maestro Junta. And thank you so much for joining us today, Maestro Junta.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Jacqueline, for inviting me.
Well, your Masterworks 1 concert opens the season with a fabulous pianist, and it's also your 30th anniversary with the Des Moines Symphony Orchestra. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I don't know where the time has gone, but it's gone, and I'm happy to still be here and, of course, to always privileged to conduct the wonderful orchestra in Des Moines we have.
Well, the show opens with the classic Bernstein Overture, and it's also kind of part of the theme for your entire season. So tell us about that.
It is. We're calling the overall theme for the season, Junta Celebrates Bernstein. And as you know, Jacqueline, I worked with Bernstein off and on for about 6 years. And first met him when I went to Tanglewood, which would have been in the late 1960s. But he was a great influence on my life and certainly a great conductor, a great pianist, great composer. And I just thought that if he would have been living today, he would have been 100. His birthday was just this past August. And I thought, what a great way to celebrate one of the great American composers and artists in Leonard Bernstein. So throughout the season, we're going to have at least one of his pieces sporadically on each program, and it's going to be very exciting for us. And we begin the season with the great Candide Overture of his.
And while the opera itself isn't performed that often, the overture is performed all the time.
Yeah, it surprised him. He never thought that it would become a part of the repertoire. And towards the end of his life, he told me that besides, of course, West Side Story, it was the piece that was the most popular throughout the world. So we're happy to play it. It's very effervescent and, I might add, quite virtuosic also, and always excited to conduct the overture to Candide and know that it has a lot of appeal, and we're all looking forward to it.
So tell us about this amazing pianist that you are bringing to the first Masterworks concert.
Well, he is brilliant, and I've watched his career grow for probably 10 years now. I first heard him at the Aspen Music Festival probably at least 10 years ago, and have just enjoyed his playing throughout the years, have seen him, maybe have heard him live at least a half a dozen times. And most recently, last May, he played in the Gershwin Concerto in F with the Chicago Symphony. It was a stunning performance, and that's when I thought, well, it's time to book this guy. So he's doing the wonderful Emperor Concerto, probably the most popular of all of the five piano concertos of Ludwig van Beethoven, and we're very excited to have Ian join us for that performance.
And he's been an Avery Fisher Career Grant winner. He was an artist in association with the New York Phil. I mean, he's just done some amazing things.
Yeah, he's still a young man in his early 30s, but his career has really skyrocketed. I think he's played with virtually every major orchestra in the world. And, you know, he's a very busy guy, so to be able to have a few days with him in Des Moines is going to be pretty special, and especially to play this piece. It's a piece that is very much a part of our repertoire, and it's going to be very exciting to hear what he brings to this Beethoven concerto.
So why is this last concerto so important in Beethoven's lineage of piano concertos?
Yeah, you know, with Beethoven, you can trace his development mostly in four ways: through his symphonies, through his piano concertos, through his sonatas, and then, of course, if you lump those together, generally through his string quartets, of course, the fourth one. But if you lump them together, there's usually an early period, middle period, and then a more mature period, a later period. And the piano concertos are just like a roadmap in terms of watching a young artist develop, writing his first couple of piano concertos in the style of Mozart and Haydn based on what had come before him. And his middle period, the third concerto, somewhat a little bit more interesting harmonically and melodically, a few more tricks and deviations and whatnot from what you might expect. And then the great fourth piano concerto that starts just with the piano and is really one of the most brilliant pieces ever written by anyone, and then followed that with this wonderful, majestic, and inspired fifth concerto in a more mature style. So it starts with the pomp and circumstance of someone very important coming into the room, and makes perfect sense that he would have dedicated it to the Archduke Rudolf, who was not only his pupil, but also his patron. And so it's very full of pomp and circumstance, the first movement. And the second movement is this beautiful B major nocturne that's something you might want to listen to sitting out one of these nice, beautiful fall evenings in Iowa, and watch the stars and just listen to this movement. It's so gorgeous. And then the last movement proceeds without interruption from the second movement, and there's this wonderfully famous note that goes from a B natural to a B flat in the bassoon that connects the second movement to the third movement. And the B flat, of course, becoming the dominant of the tonic of E flat. And it gets us off to this rondo, which is a wonderful dance. And it's easy to follow because there's an A section that comes back that's played four times, and there's a B section that's played two times, and then there's a C section, and each letter represents a contrasting section. So a rondo is A, B, and then A, C, and then A, B, A. So it's a seven-part rondo, and one that is very appealing to audience members whenever, certainly people that have come to concerts a lot and people that are hearing this piece for the first time.
So tell us, how are you going to polish off the concert?
We're going to play one of the signature pieces that I have in my repertoire that I've developed over the years with the Des Moines Symphony, the great Mahler Symphony No. 1, the Titan, the D major symphony. And this is it's a great piece. And Jacqueline, as you know, that whenever an orchestra plays Mahler, it always seems to be one of these benchmark events. And we hope that will be the case when we play this piece again.
Tell us a bit how he wrote this. He kind of based it on a book that was popular at the time.
He did. He was a man of great intellect and great spirit. And although he was also a troubled man, Jacqueline, he had all kinds of demons that he had to work through. He was a Austrian, but a German-speaking Jew, worked at the Vienna State Opera House for a while, but was fraught with all kinds of issues, including disrespect of his religion, anti-Semitic issues and whatnot. And it was really a very hard time for Mahler. He had a three-year-old little girl who died in his early life and had all kinds of traumatic issues in his life. And so that's why his music, I believe, is sort of bigger than life. I mean, you have these wonderful triumphant moments in his pieces, and then you have the moments that are just break your heart and make you want to cry. And as he said it better than anyone, his music encompasses the world. Everything that one can feel as a human being, that's what he tries to portray in his pieces. And Mahler was just one of these gentlemen that couldn't resist putting his feelings down on paper. And every time you hear 2 or 3 minutes of the music of Mahler, it's something that really, really gets into your system and into your soul and is quite engaging, I think.
Well, tell us about the different movements.
The piece has four movements, but I must say that at the very beginning, it was constructed as a five-movement piece and had an interesting history. It was composed around the middle of January and the end of March of 1888, so only really about 6 weeks it took him. And at that time, as I said, has five movements. But he did use parts of pieces that he had written previously, the Songs of a Wayfarer, his Hansel and Gretel, of course, the folk song Ruder Martin, all were a part of his inspiration. And he also used some quotes from Liszt's Dante Symphony. And then, of course, there's a couple even motives from Parsifal of Richard Wagner. So these were two of Mahler's heroes, so to speak. The piece in its first version was entitled A Symphonic Poem in Two Sections. It was premiered in Budapest in 1889, and it was really a very, very poor performance and did not have much appeal to neither critics nor the audience. The second version took place 3 years later. Mahler fussed with this a lot and changed a lot of things, and it was far more successful than the second version. The third version finally took place at the Saxon Court in Weimar This was the by far the most successful performance of the early three. And then the final version, he took what we call the Blumenau movement, the second movement out. And in 1896, that's the version that we use today. It was performed in Berlin. It's a remarkable piece for somebody that was as young as he was to compose. The first movement is a wonderful depiction of how spring slowly awakens in his world. He has this fabulous 7-octave A that happens in the very beginning, which is treacherous for an orchestra. And then he begins to open up the introduction with the sounds of nature, with fanfares and distant bird calls and so on. And it really is quite remarkable how he is able to portray the very first sounds of spring. And as, of course, spring happens, it happens to all of us that one day we're just driving somewhere and all of a sudden the buds on the tree seem to be open and vivid and bright, and that's exactly what he depicts in this first movement. It's a stunning first movement of any symphony that I can think of. The second movement is a Ländler, a dance in three-quarter time that he might have heard in his childhood in Austria, kind of like an alpine dance of some sort, which is quite wonderful and fun and delectable when you're listening to it. It's hard to not want to get up and dance. The third movement is a funeral march, and it's slow, based on Frère Jacques Brueger-Martin, as I said, and it's a little odd for audiences because right in the middle of it, you have sort of this klezmer-sounding effect with two E-flat clarinets and a bass drum and a cymbals. But if you think of 19th century Austria and a funeral dirge going down maybe a side street with a trumpet or two or a clarinet or two and a bass drum and a cymbals, it makes perfect sense then. And it's really quite a wonderful depiction of a funeral. And then finally, this last movement, which is kind of a symphony in its own, it begins, in Mahler's words, with a flash of lightning from a dark cloud. I mean, it is just the heartbroken hero that we know and love, and it's a cry of a wounded heart, and goes into from the Inferno to this place of triumph and paradise. That's basically the theme of the last movement. It's similar in style, Jacqueline, to the Beethoven Ninth, similar in presentation from the chaos in the beginning to the triumph of glory at the end. And it's without question one of the great symphonies of all time. And whenever I've conducted it, it always reminds me of how small we are as human beings, that the music just comes to life and just completely engages and overtakes you.
Production thanks for this interview goes to Iowa Public Radio's John Pemble, Chris Fenton, and Alexis Hahn. And a big thank you to music director and conductor of the Des Moines Symphony, who is this year celebrating his 30th anniversary with the Des Moines Symphony Orchestra, Maestro Joseph Giunta. And thanks so much for joining us today, Maestro Giunta.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jacqueline.